Guys, we made it. It is December 31st, 2021, somehow. And this concludes both the year and our week-long stretch of our favorite episodes from the last 365 days. And today's episode, we're playing it for you because it originally aired in June ahead of the Tokyo Olympic Games, but it's still relevant today for reasons you will soon find obvious. It is the incredible journey of a scientist who helped develop the first FDA-approved COVID vaccine, the vaccine that's been credited with saving millions of lives, the vaccine that's still our way out of everything, and also her Olympian daughter. So we hope you enjoy it, and Happy New Year.
More steps are now being taken to keep athletes and officials safe at the Olympics in Tokyo, Japan. The International Olympic Committee, the IOC, says that Pfizer plans to donate vaccines to Olympians and to Olympic officials. They'll be vaccinated before they get into Tokyo.
You can feel it now, this lockdown planet opening back up with the coronavirus vaccine as the key. And now, as the sports world turns to its biggest stage, the Olympic Games, just 1 month away, we tell the story of the scientist responsible for the optimism you may be feeling, and her daughter, an Olympian, who, like her mom, refused to give up. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, June 24th. This is ESPN Daily. Julie, it is a wild time to be talking to you right now. You're in the middle of covering Euro 2020, an event that had been delayed due to COVID. The Olympics are also right on the horizon, also thrown into flux by the coronavirus pandemic. Mm-hmm. But you have this documentary feature that you've been preparing for E60 that feels like it sits at the center of this entire messy Venn diagram. It is about sports. It is about science. It is about the pandemic and the Olympics. And one particular family.
This, first of all, Pablo, is a gift of a story. It's a reporter's dream.
Julie Foudy is an Olympic and World Cup champion with the U.S. women's national team. And now she's a soccer commentator and reporter for ESPN.
You have a mom who is a scientist who has toiled for decades on something that she believes deeply in, and this technology that led to the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine that the scientific community took so long to understand. You have a daughter who's an athlete who doesn't realize her full potential until later in life, and their combined journey and a willingness to grind it out in the best of ways and just figure it out along the way has literally changed the world and saved millions of lives.
Perseverance, that's pretty much my life, my family's life in a nutshell.
And you spent time talking to these two women about their stories that are so entwined, Julie. There's Susan Francia, the daughter of the family, and this world-class rower.
Defying the odds and trying to keep forging ahead even when all sorts of challenges are being thrown your way. So I know what that's like in sports. My mom has lived that in science. A lot of ups and downs, then you really appreciate those ups.
And her mother, Dr. Kate Carrico, a biochemist who has been toiling in labs for decades, and a discovery of hers led directly to the coronavirus vaccine.
It was always what we started, we want to finish. What I see in everything is a potential to do the work and what it could mean for others.
So I know the story will culminate in the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine as well. These are things that we can draw a straight line from Dr. Carrico. But the beginning of this story, where would you start that?
The story actually starts in communist Hungary, where she was born. And it starts in the 80s, really, because she gets her PhD. Dr. Carrico gets her PhD in 82. Her daughter, Susan, was born that same year.
I used to tell her the story that I shook her hands and I introduced myself and said that, "Hello, Susan, I am your mother." I never talked to her like a child, you know, that always like another person. And and she learned some complicated words early on, you know, because I was talking about plasminogen activators and things like that.
She gets fired from her research job shortly after that, and the funding is pulled for her to do her work, and she's out of options. So she comes to America.
So to get to America, I know this is Cold War times, Julie. I imagine it's not just a matter of buying a ticket and easily starting a new life in a whole different place.
No, it wasn't like that. So in communist Hungary at the time, they really wanted to deter people from leaving the country. And so they were only allowed to travel if you were going to leave the country with $50 on them. So, and this is the first part of the amazing story, is they decide that they're going to sell their car on the black market, and they get about $1,200 for this. And so they sew it into Susan, their daughter, who's 2.5 at the time, her teddy bear. Literally, they talk about performing this operation on the back of the teddy bear because they said, look, no one's going to look at Susan.
And Susan is now the smuggler.
Exactly. With the cute little teddy bear.
So my parents laughed that, like, I was, they're like, oh, she's the smuggler. She's the criminal. It's definitely, you know, it brings up some emotions for me because it really just shows where we came from and the risk that my parents were willing to take to make for a better life.
So you have this family. You have Dr. Carrico, a PhD in biochemistry. You have her husband, Bella. You have their daughter, Susan. And when they get there, of course, there isn't a ton of career prospects in the 1980s. There's not a lot of money for them. Was this something that was crushing? Did they notice how hard all of this was?
Dr. Carrico's background in Hungary is, and she says it very matter of fact, I had a wonderful upbringing in Hungary, but we didn't have running water. We didn't have electricity. My dad was a butcher. And it was a very happy and very simple upbringing. And so when she gets to America and they're, you know, struggling to make it work with a young daughter and Susan, it was like, this is what we do.
And then my husband, he had to do odd jobs, cut grass and clean windows and whatever job was available. And I went to the university to work.
What did Dad do?
So he started working at the apartment complex that we moved to. And he still works at that same apartment complex. 30-some years.
So Dr. Carrico eventually winds up at the University of Pennsylvania, Julie. And that's where she really starts to focus on her theories about messenger RNA, mRNA. How would you describe how that went early on?
Well, just a little background, and I'm not a scientist, so you're going to get the layman's version of this on mRNA, but it's essentially, and what she felt is it could be used to tell cells to do anything. So, for example, for the COVID vaccine, if you inject mRNA into your body, your cells start producing this spike protein that the real virus uses to infect you, and your body detects this new protein and it recognizes it as a foreign threat and it starts producing antibodies to fight it. The problem, though, being that when they were first testing this synthetic mRNA, it produced a dangerous inflammatory response in animals. And that was really the hiccup.
So her path at Penn, I know, wasn't smooth, Julie. How would you describe the setbacks that she was facing?
Well, so much of a lab's existence at universities, of course, depends on grant money. And Dr. Carrico was having a really hard time getting grants accepted. And so she just kept getting rejection after rejection. And University of Pennsylvania actually demoted her to instructor. And in the world of academia, that is a huge demotion. She says it as, you know, there were times where I wasn't even making as much as the lab technician next to me.
And that would be enough struggle on its own, Julie, but I know that wasn't the only thing that this household was facing at the time.
No. First, Dr. Carrico has a cancer scare, and while she's dealing with this, her husband Bella discovers that he needs to go back to Hungary to deal with a visa green card issue. And he's actually forced to stay in Hungary during all of this. And so Dr. Carrico and Susan actually drive down to the White House to protest that dad and the husband is still stuck in Hungary.
Oh, I had a breast tumor, but it was not malignant, turned out. But actually, day after the operation, my husband get the notification that he has to go to Hungary to pick up the green card. And so he were not eligible to return. So he was stuck in Hungary, and I was here with Susan. She was playing in a tenor saxophone, and then we went to protest against it. My husband couldn't come back, and we went to the White House. In front of the White House, we had to ask permission and everything, and then she played in front of the White House.
Her career seems to be on the verge of breaking, too. What does she do in the lab? How does she approach her life's work as it is now at risk in a real way?
This is the amazing part of Dr. Carrico, that when you hear these stories, it gives you the goosebumps, because what she does is she just carries on.
I don't know if she would be in the same position she is in right now of having mRNA be a platform if she hadn't been demoted. Because then it was like, all right, hey, then no one cares about my title. I'm just going to do what I want to do then.
Spending, you know, 12, 15, 20 hours a day in the lab because she's convinced. She's correct.
So it feels important to point out that this is the mid-90s. It is not the easiest time to be a woman scientist. It's not the easiest time to be an immigrant. And how difficult was this all for the family to navigate?
You know, they, again, amazingly talk about how hard it was, but in such a matter-of-fact way that this is part of the journey. This is part of the process. This is, you know, America in the 90s, and I'm a woman and I'm an immigrant, and, you know, I'm not even getting recognized on some of the research that they're putting forward. They actually applied for a patent for what they had discovered with synthetic mRNA, and Dr. Carrico wasn't listed on the top of that. She actually had to bring it up and say, hey, I should get top billing on this.
It was pretty tough. My mom would have these great discoveries and she'd be so excited. And then there'd be a little bit of bureaucracy or someone who would put her down.
And when I went to a conference actually and gave a lecture about the modified RNA, and after the lecture, another female scientist asked me that, who is your supervisor? And I said, do I need one?
So in the background, while all of this is happening, is young Susan, the teddy bear carrying daughter of Dr. Carrico, who is now growing up, and growing up very literally. I mean, she becomes 6'2 in high school, mm-hmm. and she's trying to figure out what she's going to do with her life. How was sports for Susan as she started out?
Yeah, when you look at Susan at 6'2 in high school and you see her, she's strong. You know, I'm thinking she is crushing it in high school. And so
you can smell a former jock, Julie. You're like, you clearly had something
going.
Here.
Oh my God, look at this body that is this gift. And she goes, not so much. I won a lot of most improved and most spirited trophies. That was the big joke in the family, is you got a lot of most spirited trophies, Susan. Well done.
What was Dr. Carrico like as a sports parent, like on the sidelines?
Dr. Carrico, according to Susan, was very intense. And to the point where Now, Bella's back, of course, from Hungary. He's gotten all his visa issues resolved. And when they would show up at games, Dr. Carrico would start screaming in Hungarian as well.
She would just be yelling so loudly in Hungarian. And it was really great. Our coach, who had no idea what was going on, would be like, hey, I don't know what she's saying. And then after a while, I actually banned her from coming to my games. I said, no, only Dad can come to the games.
And they laugh about it, of course, now.
All right, coming up, Susan breaks through as an athlete. And Dr. Carrico gets her breakthrough in the lab.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So now we're in the year 2000, Julie, and Dr. Carrico is still toiling away in her lab. And Susan is now at the University of Pennsylvania herself as a student, not an athlete, but just like a normal normie student.
Well, as fate would have it, there is a flyer going around campus recruiting rowers. And she's thinking, well, I'm tall, and why not give it a try? So Susan actually begins rowing her sophomore year at UPenn. And by the time she's a senior, she's an All-American, Pablo. So she is finally discovering her athletic potential. And by 2005, when she's 23, she gets invited to row with the U.S. national team.
The gap is not closing. In fact, as I say that, the Americans just push again, and they are going to take this by the best part of three quarters of a length. And the USA come home to take the women's eights. The gold medal goes to America.
Once I graduated from Penn, my parents were like, all right, you got that great job. And I was like, yeah, I got that job offer, but actually, I think I'm going to go try out for the U.S. Olympic team. They're like, most spirited? Are you sure? Are you sure you're going to try out for the Olympics? So they let me go. And then after I made the team and then kept making the team, then they were like, all right, great, all in, let's do this. And they were supportive through that whole Olympic journey.
So her daughter is now one of the best rowers in the United States. She's a member of the national team. And meanwhile, in 2005 now, Dr. Carrico finally has a breakthrough in the lab with her research partner, Dr. Drew Wiseman. What is the breakthrough in question?
So, as you can recall, Pablo, the real issue with synthetic mRNA was the body was rejecting it. Finally, in 2005, Dr. Wiseman and Dr. Carrico discovered that if you added a molecule to that synthetic mRNA called pseudouridine, it actually eliminated that dangerous inflammatory response in the body. And she called that moment magic.
When they made that discovery, my mom then realized like what an impact this really could have on, you know, healing, and also how it was probably going to totally upset the pharmaceutical industry.
Dr. Carrico and Dr. Wiseman, of course, thought, ah, this is the moment. Here it is. We're handing you this. And to their continued surprise, Pablo, it was not embraced.
There is a song, Julie, that you stumbled upon that Dr. Kuriko would sing to Susan when she was growing up. And I mention it because it seems like this song, an old Hungarian song, is kind of the essence of this particular mother-daughter relationship. How would you describe what that song's about?
Yes, exactly. The song is about going down into a mine to find gold. And essentially, the song they tell me, because my Hungarian is not good, Pablo, the song that they tell me is that it's all about, which is their story, you have to go find the gold. You have to get dirty. You got to get into the mine. You gotta roll up your sleeves, because the glory is in actually putting in that work.
So my mom, especially when it was Olympic selection, or, you know, I was kind of down, or there were like tough times, you know, she would mention this song. And the song is all about how, you know, the gold is shines so much brighter when you're the one who goes and you mine for it.
And, you know, that was, I told her, because when she was all so close to the finish line to make the Olympics, and she said, you know, I don't have more. And then I was telling her this song.
Julie, I have to imagine, you know, we don't have many guests who are gold medalists, World Cup winners, but you are. And I imagine that parable about the grind is something that you can relate to.
Oh, absolutely. And especially for Olympians, it's, you know, everyone says, oh, it's once every 4 years. And our refrain always is, no, it's every day, actually. That's this song for them, is this reminder, whether it's Dr. Kuriko and her rejections in the lab, or it's Susan and her determination to make this Olympic team, is that you've got to put in the work.
All of this brings us to the 2008 Games in Beijing in China. And what happens there?
So the United States, for all the success they've had, Romania actually had been the country that had been dominating the women's eight crew race at the Games. They'd actually won the last three Olympic gold medals. And so the United States come in as an underdog. And Susan walks me through that race, and she says a very interesting thing. You know, you can't see the finish line when you're rowing. It's always that your back is to the finish line. I can't see it, but I can sense that we're there, that we're about to win this. And then, of course, the U.S. team goes on to win that 2008 Olympic gold medal in Beijing.
Yeah, it's the final race, and it's dead quiet. And we know that we have 2,000 meters before we could be crowned as Olympic champions. I was just really excited to be there with my teammates and this dream and make it happen.
But I have to tell you that because there were 4 years before that, you know, the every day when she was calling in the morning, you know, sometimes I dreaded that it's not going well, or today is going well. Okay, another day. So it was kind of, you know, a big relief. And of course, it's a happiness that my daughter is an Olympic champion. So I was very proud of her.
Yeah, the idea that this is a sport where you are literally going backwards, but you're also at the same time racing towards a finish line.
I know. And you, when you hear that analogy, when she said that, it was this moment of, oh my gosh, and that's your mom, and that's you. You don't know what, you don't know. You can't see that end result, but you're going to put in the work.
A gold medal, Julie, feels like a pretty good capper to any story like this. It feels like the end of the movie, the climactic seed. That's a good place to stop. But what happens?
No, like all movies, Pablo, there's a setback. Susan gets injured in 2011. She said it was very specific. I knew when it happened. She herniated her disc between her L4 and L5 vertebrae in her lower back. And for most, it would be a career-ending injury, for a rower particularly.
So a year out from the Olympics, it wasn't even that, like, oh, rowing hurts a little bit. It's that I couldn't even, like, lift a plate of food off of the dinner table. It was just my everyday.
How did the people in her life react to her being as hobbled as she is in what clearly is a pretty depressing state?
Well, Susan, of course, and the way she's wired with her DNA and her family, is wanting to carry on and fight through it. And her parents expressed concern that, hey, maybe this isn't smart. And Susan was like, hell no, I'm not done.
Whew, the word quit. Yeah, that's not a word we really have in our vocabulary in the Francia household.
And so she goes through 10 months of grueling rehab, and she's trying to fight back to get on that 2012 Olympic team, and does just that.
Once I was at that starting line, I again just felt this excitement of, all right, what are we going to be doing today? What are we going to lay down and get this gold? I've done everything that I could in my power. So let's do this. Let's go get it. The power that I felt from all 8 of us was just unreal.
So we were waiting her to return from the venue, and my sister was there also, and so very proud, you know, she made it twice.
Okay, so with her daughter fighting back from injury to win that second gold medal, I want to return to Dr. Kuriko's race to victory in the lab.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So while all of that is happening, her mom is still in the lab, Julie. So where is she in her work at this point?
She makes a huge career move. Dr. Kuriko decides to leave the University of Pennsylvania for a new startup company in Germany called BioNTech. And this actually is the first time, remarkably, given how long she's been working on this research, where she's paid as a full-time professional, permanent position.
I was 58 years old when I left. I never had a permanent job. My job is always when the money is running out. The university is not providing zero, not a penny. Only a grant is supporting the salary. And the grant you have to gain for yourself, or somebody else will get the grant, and then you have to work for that person.
Of course, the pandemic hits in 2020, and every technology is being considered. And when the Chinese scientists released that genetic code for COVID-19 in January of 2020, Dr. Kuriko says that her and her team at BioNTech were able to design a vaccine within hours. Within hours. And mind you, in the past, when they're trying to come up with vaccines, this is a process that takes years. And she matter-of-factly says, yes, we were able to design the vaccine within hours.
Julie, I just want to sit in this for a second, because this is a woman who has been in the mines for decades, and then finally she turns this thing around faster than anybody on our planet had ever imagined.
Think about that. It's insane. And then, of course, BioNTech, because they're a startup company, they partner with Pfizer to go into clinical trials and mass production.
And the rest from there, Julie, I mean, that's history. And because what happens on November 8th, 2020, the birthday of her daughter, Susan, an announcement comes down.
There is some good news from Pfizer tonight. Final results showing their vaccine 95% effective, and they now expect to ask for emergency use authorization by Friday.
When you talk to any scientist or doctor or expert in this field, they will say that is a crazy high, insane rate for a vaccine. To get 95% back effective.
She gets the A+, the 95%. On a vaccine that saves the world. And how does she celebrate this, Julie?
I think I would have popped a bubbly or a large, you know, barrel of wine, but
yeah, I would have maybe hired skywriters. I maybe would have gotten a magnum of champagne and doused it on every scientist who ever doubted me. I would try to do all of that if that was me. Yeah.
Yeah. No. When we asked, you know, what did you do to celebrate this? She's like, I ate a box of Goobers.
And I just told my husband that I will eat the whole box, which is like not much because it is a movie theater box.
Any human being, I would imagine, might feel conflict because, on the one hand, she gets to shout, if she was so inclined, "I told you so," to the entire scientific community and more. But on the other hand, also, like, this is a really, really hard time, and this involved so much of her life that I imagine there was some complicated feelings about all of this.
Her response is, "Look, I am just so happy that we were able to create something that's saving millions of lives."
And she went to see some of those first vaccine injections herself, Julie, at a site where healthcare workers were getting their shots. And you reported that it brought tears to her eyes.
Yeah, so for me, is the time I cried was when we walk in, and then in the adjacent room, there was the official injection place, and their workers getting their first shot. It was December 18. And then the new chairman of neurosurgery was saying, "Here comes those who invented vaccine," and they were just clapping there.
And she actually says the frontline workers are the heroes because they're the ones that put themselves at risk and who are dealing with the pandemic.
Those are the real heroes. They went to work every day to treat patients, and they knew that if they get it, they could die.
When does the victory lap come for Dr. Carrico? What's she up to now?
No victory lap at all. She essentially said, I'm back in my lab working on new things now, because this is just the start of what we're going to realize with synthetic mRNA and these mRNA vaccines in wound care and strokes. And for example, they're working on the Zika virus. But she said the real potential that she's so excited about is in the field of cancer. And so she's already back in the lab, Susan even confirmed it, you know, grinding away on what this next new discovery will be in this field.
So as Dr. Carrico's ambitions are clearly not stopping anytime soon, her legacy is going to shape sports in a different way. Because at the Olympic Games, Julie, the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is going to be available to every athlete and official in Tokyo.
Yeah, again, a full circle moment. and how these journeys and paths have just continued to be woven together, given obviously their history as a family with the Olympic Games. It just seems to be perfectly fitting that, of course, Dr. Kuriko's vaccine would be the ones that they use for those officials and athletes in Tokyo.
So, Julie, as you look back on this story, which is never going to get out of my head as I make my way into the sunlight of hopefully post-pandemic America, what's going to stick with you?
One, that how did we not know the story of Dr. Kate Kuriko better? And two, the story of immigrants who come with a teddy bear and $1,200 sewn into the teddy bear that Susan smuggles in at its 2.5-year-old, then becomes an Olympic gold medalist 2 times over. And all that they've done as a family to make that happen, and the work and the sacrifice and the commitment to say it's not about the gold, it's not about the rewards that come from that hard work. It's just that good things happen in life when you put in the work.
We lived the American dream. You know, we came here with very little and we were given small opportunities. Yeah, and with some setbacks. But every single time we were given that opportunity, we, you know, capitalized on that and moved forward and tried to be the best that we could be. People hearing this story, our family story, is really that, you know, you can do so much with very little, you know, and for kids that have a dream, you know, you can fulfill that dream. You just have to put in the work.
Julie Foudy, our very own Olympian, thanks for mining for gold with us on ESPN Daily.
Thanks, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.